You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Broke like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing. The good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with cellist Christine Lamprea, who will be performing the Dvorak Cello Concerto at the Hilton Head Symphony Concert on Sunday, October 19th at 4 p.m. and Monday, October 20th at 7:30 p.m., both at the First Presbyterian Church, 540 William Hilton Parkway. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Christine Lamprea.
Hello, thanks for having me.
But let's get to know Christine Lamprea. Tell me your musical journey.
Sure. I started the cello in the fifth grade. I grew up in San Antonio, Texas, primarily. And in Texas, there's a thriving public music education program. And it's actually funny, it's actually mostly funded through football, because football is so popular, the marching bands end up getting a lot of money. And then they had so much money that classical music getting quite a bit of money. So we had a very good public music education program in San Antonio. And so I started in the fifth grade with this after school class. And I wanted to play the bass, because what kind of fifth grader wants to play classical music? That's what I thought at the time. The only exposure to classical music I'd had was my parents playing top 100 Mozart hits, because they read somewhere that it would help us in school. So I wanted to play the bass, but then it was too big for our family car. So I chose the next biggest one, cello, just for the kind of look of it. And I fell in love with it. It came easily to me. So I think there was an element of young competitor spirit there. I started taking lessons a few years later. And then my parents, they're the first generation that immigrated here. So I'm the first generation that was born in the U.S. My parents are from Colombia, South America. And so they were concerned with me just going to college and making sure I was going to have a sustainable future. But then cello started taking off. I was applying to a lot of double degree programs, because they were like, get a degree in something else and music and balance both. But then once I got into Juilliard, they not changed their tune, but very tentatively were like, okay, well, this is an opportunity you can't pass up. At least try it a little bit and see what happens. And we'll support you if it doesn't work out for, you know, just in your change into something else. And then I'm still doing it here. So that's how I ended up here. And now I live in New York City and do a lot of things. I play as a soloist. I play in chamber ensembles. And I also teach at Boston University. I teach at the Longy School of Music in Boston as well, in Cambridge. And then I also teach at Montclair State University in New Jersey. So I have a very mobile, inefficient, but beautiful life.
And you mentioned you're involved in chamber music. And just this past week, I talked with Emily Levine about the Emperor, and which you're part of, and the Birds of Paradise album.
Yeah, we're really excited about the release of that disc. I met Emily, we had the same manager, and she reached out to me, and we started this harp trio, and it's been such a pleasure, and the music on that album is really excellent, and we're very proud of it, so.
How do you divide your time then between living and working in New York City, but having appointments up in Boston?
So I live very close to LaGuardia Airport. I live in Astoria, which houses the Steinway Piano Factory. It's a really beautiful area. And actually, it's of personal significance because my parents, when they moved from Colombia and met in Astoria, so that's quite nice to live here. But it's also a 5-minute Uber to the airport. So I'll usually fly very early in the morning and get there to teach at 10 a.m. or something like that. And then I'll fly back. And sometimes I take the train if I have some emails I haven't addressed or have been procrastinating on. I'll sit on the train and knock all of those out. I try to just schedule my personal administrative work for those commuting times. And then the other times I'm mostly just trying to practice. And then teaching takes a lot of time, but I find that it's kind of like passive practice. It really reinforces a lot of ideas. So I wouldn't say that I'm like totally out of shape while I'm teaching. They really help make my practicing a lot more efficient.
You actually are the second Lamprea I've talked to. A couple of years ago, I talked to a Stephanie Lamprea.
Yeah, my younger sister. There are not many of us out there. Oh, you didn't realize we were sisters. Stephanie is 14 months younger than I am. We actually both started on the cello, but I started first. And then my mother, very well-intentioned, suggested that, you know, if I was already taking lessons, I should just pass those lessons on to my sister. And she amicably split with the cello after my lessons, and she became a singer. So, yeah, we found our own paths after a while.
Yeah, I talked to her, oh, gee, it's got to be a little over 2 years ago now, about her album of George Abergir's 14 Recitations.
Yeah, I admire her so much. And we don't collaborate in order to preserve our relationship as sisters, but I actually really love her performing, and her sense of musicianship is really beautiful. But yeah, very honored to be the second Lamprea to talk to you.
Well, we're here to talk about your performance of the Dvorak Cello Concerto at the Hilton Head Symphony Orchestra. And not to say that other cello concertos require much effort, but this one is a real test of your endurance.
Yeah, it's a beast of its own, for sure.
And how do you prepare to do a cello concerto like this? I presume you've performed the Dvorak before.
I have performed it about 5 or 6 times. And I was, before we hopped on this interview, I was just at the gym. I do try to make sure I'm physically in shape, because just even having good cardiovascular health, that's the primary thing for me. Just making sure that I have enough energy to get through a section while still being able to process intellectually very well and be incredibly focused. That's super important. So I do make sure I'm physically in shape. But also, actually, before I concern myself with physical things, I basically take the piece, revisit the score, because the Dvorak it's a beast, but there's so many great cellists that have played it, and there's so many standard interpretations. And so it's very easy to get stuck on those superficial listens of those concertos and do similar mannerisms, idiosyncrasies. So I basically go straight to the score and to the bass line. The bass line is basically the skeleton of the piece. And so I basically sing my line with the bass line and try to develop my own connection to it, something that's fresh. I don't want to come up with a performance that's different for the sake of being different, but something that feels very earnest. And so I spend quite a bit of time on that. That requires some real mindfulness, really quiet time. In order to access that, it takes some time to just quiet the brain and listen in a different way. And then once I get one little idea, then everything kind of starts sprouting off of that very quickly. But it's the kind of settling down and finding the crux of that in the beginning that's a little tough. But then it's incredibly rewarding when you do find that thing where you're like, oh, this is mine. And then I start physically preparing. So I'll do like one chunk and play it over and over. I've played it before, so the notes are pretty much learned. It's mostly fine-tuning. But the physical act of doing it, get tired in the middle, and then I make dumb mistakes. So it's a matter of making sure I'm not tired so that I can stay focused without too much trouble. So I basically divide the piece into thirds, fourths, and then add a third, add a fourth as I go on. And then interpretations are mature, like any person matures. You know, you can't necessarily intellectualize yourself to a mature performance. You just have to do it. You have to live with it. So over the next couple of weeks, I have some private performances here where I'm just trying things and just living with it. So by the time I get to Hilton Head, it should be hopefully pretty lived in at that point.
Now, selection of a concerto to do. Did John Morris Russell, JMR, come to you and say, we'd like to have the Dvorak? Or is it a decision that you both make together?
I have it on my repertoire list, my offerings. I believe Hilton had approached Sphinx, the Sphinx organization, which represents me. And usually with programming, it's a little bit of a chicken and the egg situation. So first, if the orchestra has already programmed that concerto, when was the last time it was played? And then what is the whole theme of the season looking like? If there's a little bit of flexibility in terms of this program has some flexibility and we just need a virtuosic piece or something like that, then maybe there'll be a discussion with the cellist. But sometimes the theme is very tight-knit, and so they'll ask for a specific piece that I offer. And Dvorak, I always say yes to.
On your list of works that you perform, of course, there's the obvious ones. Do you have a chance to work on perhaps less well-known ones? The relative popularity of less well-known ones as well as more known ones in terms of people coming to ask you for those?
Yeah, I'm asked for them less for sure. I think in this, it depends on the place. Fortunately, most of the opportunities I've had as a concerto soloist, people are very thoughtful with how they program. I think sometimes people are a little afraid of programming something off the beaten track because it won't sell tickets, it won't attract people. But if people see Tchaikovsky Rococo variations or something like that, you know, that's a for sure thing to fill seats. However, I do find that pieces outside of the canon, at least the ones that I chosen to play, have been really engaging. I play the Samuel Barber Cello Concerto a lot, which is one of my favorite pieces to play. I play a lot of contemporary music also. I played a piece that was written for me by a composer in Ohio, Jeffrey Mumford. He studied with Elliot Carter, so it's kind of along that vein, but has a lot of beautiful rhapsodic moments. I played a cello rhapsody by a young composer. I think she's from Oklahoma. Her name is Diana Wallace. I played a concerto of hers at the Longy School of Music with the orchestra there last year. That really gives me a lot of energy because it just forces me to expand my thinking, and all of that comes back to inform the canon. But I find that audiences are, you know, I mean, you'll hear about people that, oh, I don't like contemporary music. But I think if the performer is very clear about the structure, they're incredibly colorful. You almost have to work a little harder to sell the pieces sometimes. But I find that a really good way to just hone your artistic way of speaking. You have to just be so colorful and so convincing to keep their minds open.
The Dvorak Cello Concerto. It is in three movements. First movement marked Allegro. The second marked Adagio ma non troppo, slow but not too slow. And the third movement is Finale, Allegro Maturato. And the first movement, Allegro, it opens quietly with this sort of orchestral dark opening. But then it suddenly becomes quite bright and powerful with the orchestra. Then we get more lyrical with the orchestra, primarily woodwinds and strings and French horns. Then we have that powerful orchestral statement again. And then eventually, about 3.5 minutes in, there's the first cello theme, and you jump in equally forcefully with double stops. But then you move into a lyrical section, and you alternate sort of between these sort of powerful and lyrical versions of the theme, supported by primarily the strings and the woodwinds. But the power then builds as you go through the piece, and it builds with more brass particularly supporting you. and the powerful orchestral section, then into a quieter section with strings and horns. The way Dvorak uses the woodwinds and the French horns is just marvelous, particularly in combination with the cello.
Yes, it's so magical. There's this one spot in the middle of the exposition, and then it comes back later in the recap of the first movement where the cellist has sextuplets, and it's just a ta-ka-ta-ka-ta-ka-ta-ka-ta-ka-ta. It is an incredibly virtuosic part for the cellist. There actually isn't a substantial melody in that section. The flutes are just going ta-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I'm just kind of filling in harmonically. And so there's no narrative in those 30 seconds. It's just kind of like beautiful harmony. And the way Dvorak orchestrates that is just, I don't know, it has like the delicacy of Schumann almost in that moment. He was such a great orchestrator, especially with cello, I think. I think maybe in the sense of balance, he got a little excited and put so many things in, but coloristically, I think he just made so many great choices. The development is just so beautiful. The way to scale that together with the orchestra, and then it leads up to this octave climax, which is the bane of every cellist's existence to play, but it's really fun once you know how to play it.
The ending of the piece is the powerful, fanfarish, sort of with a swelling crescendo to a final chord.
Thank you.
WRUULP Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
The First Friday for Folk Music Concert on Friday, October 3rd, starting at 7:30 p.m., features two sets with award-winning folk songwriter Karen Oliver from Fort Worth, Texas. Her original, authentic, and compelling songs reach deep into your heart. The concert is at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, Savannah. More information can be found at savannahfolk.org. This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with cellist Christine Lamprea, who will be performing the Dvorak Cello Concerto at the Hilton Head Symphony Concert on Sunday, October 19th at 4 p.m. and Monday, October 20th at 7:30 p.m., both at the First Presbyterian Church, 540 William Hilton Parkway. And the second movement is Adagio Ma Non Troppo, where the first movement has these melancholic, you sort of expect the adagio to be real melancholy, but it isn't. It's sort of bright. And the ma non troppo, I think, is a very appropriate designation because you don't want it to be too slow. You want it to have this sort of singing quality to it. And there's just a beautiful opening with this woodwinds and singing. And then very quickly, the cello sort of echoes that introduction.
Yeah, you're putting pressure on me, Dave, because now I'm going to sit up there. I'm like, well, Dave said to not play it too slow, so I'll play it faster. No, I'm kidding. Talk about beautiful orchestration with the winds, especially. Yeah, it's just so peaceful. And then there are moments of darkness that add to that layer. But yeah, it's overall much more peaceful respite.
In the second movement, you particularly hear that communication between the cello and the woodwinds, although it's throughout the entire piece.
Thank you.
And then the finale, which is marked Allegro Moderato. It's really a rondo form, as many final movements are. And it opens with the horns playing the main theme quietly, with the strings with this sort of metronomic ostinato beat behind it. It's just so inviting.
Yeah, it's literally bubbling, I think, ebullient at its best. You know, you just, it's almost like Jurassic Park, very much of that kind of menacing nature. But it's menacing, but then it introduces this very fun kind of dance back and forth. So it's almost like preparing you for something much darker, but then it's like a party. So yeah, it's a fun surprise in that way.
And the theme you first hear in the woodwinds and the strings, but then the cello quickly enters and then is playing sort of a modified version of that. And if I'm not mistaken, it's marked risoluto. And because you are very firm and forceful in your reply to the orchestra.
Correct. I think for me, the resoluteness keeps the moderate tempo, because a lot of times presto, virtuosic, flying out of your seat, the Barber Violin Concerto, the last movement just runs away from you. But this is very much the resoluteness. I think it keeps this kind of like check dance feeling to it, a nice swing to it, so it has a very unique Czech energy.
And this movement has a very interesting combination of what you just mentioned, that sort of swing, sort of dance-like feel with a very majestic feel.
This piece was started towards the end of his residency in the United States and then finished once he went back home. A lot of the works that he wrote in the U.S. were informed by the spirituals of African-American slaves, by Americana in general. So you hear that the very obvious example is the American Quartet. This piece is a slight departure from that. You do hear, for example, the second theme of the first movement is very much in that vein, but the rest of it is more Czech influenced, and I think it was showing that he was really missing home. So you hear kind of a like Czech influence by American aesthetics. And so I think you got it right, you know, this kind of danciness, but there's this majestic view of orchestration and structure. So I think definitely someone influenced by a different country at some point.
Then you have this sort of moderato section right in the middle, which is sort of an alternation between the sweet legato writing and the more powerful cello writing. Then there's this wonderful interaction between the woodwinds and the cello again with this crescendo. And then it sort of ends with a very powerful cello restatement of the theme and some powerful orchestral chords.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it is a rondo form, which basically means, for those listening, that it starts with a theme and then there's kind of a different section, and then the theme comes back, and then there's a different section. So you'll hear the theme coming back several times with slightly different energies, but it always comes back.
And then as we head toward the end, you have this quiet lyrical section in the cello along with the woodwinds, strings, and then some very quiet brass. But then you have this very quick cello crescendo that leads to the orchestral ending, these powerful statements by the full orchestra, and then these three very rhythmic chords at the end.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's a lot of music without the cello on either end of the piece. maybe a sign of things being bigger than the individual or something. But yeah, the whole coda of the last movement is kind of in memoriam to his sister-in-law, Josephine, that had passed before this. And so it's all kind of a song to her. And wow, the way he ascends, he just makes, you know, how can music make us feel like we're going to heaven? You know, this is a prime example of that. So we really feel that dedication. And then the big crescendo to the end is almost like the pearly gates opening up, and very beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have been talking with cellist Christine Lamprea. As we've been talking about, she'll be performing the Dvorak Cello Concerto at the Hilton Head Symphony Concert on Sunday, October 19th at 4 p.m. and Monday, October 20th at 7:30 p.m., both at the First Presbyterian Church, 540 William Hilton Parkway. And I want to thank you so very much, Christine, for being on the show tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'm really looking forward to being back in Hilton Head.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.